Campus FM presents a talk organized by the Cheritonia Foundation. Fiona Texer from the Institute of Political Studies in Rennes will give a talk entitled At the Gate of Fortress Europe, Irregular Immigration and Malta.
Good evening. Thank you all for coming. Ladies and gentlemen, dear friends, so I'm very glad that you are all here today, because today I will present the study I've been working on for 7 months. So to give a bit of background, I'm French. I took the opportunity given by my institute, the Institute for Political Science, to come to Malta for the academic year. And here I've studied the subject of irregular immigration, so this controversial issue. And I've noticed that though the subject is highly discussed in politics, in newspapers, in the daily life, there was no comparative study on this fairly new phenomenon. So my objective has been to cast a light on this misunderstood issue by compiling all the available data and all the available information on irregular immigrants in Malta. So for the past months, I tried to gather this information either from the internet, from the daily newspaper, the local press, several publications and professionals of the fields, journalists, political leaders, etc. So I've studied the problem through the eyes of the foreigner, of a French student, of a woman in her 20s too, and a non-Maltese speaker. So these elements may be regarded as disadvantages, but I would rather see them as a proof of sincerity, and that is necessary when reporting about immigration. So all this data is compiled in the independent study At the Gates of Fortress Europe, Irregular Immigration and Malta. So this dwells on a specific type of immigration, the case of both people arriving irregularly and sometimes undocumented on the Maltese shores. So first, I'd like to clarify the vocabulary, because these immigrants are irregular immigrants and no clandestini or illegal immigrants, simply because the act of immigration, of illegal immigration, has been decriminalized, and no one is illegal in the sense that they just entered Malta regularly, so where is the crime? And it was not even their intention to come to Malta. So the study is entitled At the Gate of Fortress Europe, because the starting point is that the European Union is not an impenetrable fortress, because Malta is a breach in the fortress, and there are thousands of immigrants who are seeking a better future, or merely in future, in our countries. So the beginning of the story of Malta in irregular immigration is the one of a misunderstanding and a paradoxical situation. We have, on one side, the immigrants who intended to go to Italy and who arrived by mistake here. On the other side, we have a large number of Maltese citizens who don't want to have the immigrants here. And all this exists because of the Dublin Convention. I will come back to this convention later on. So my aim in this study is to answer several questions. What led to the wave of immigration from Africa and the Middle East to Malta? How is the crisis currently tackled here? What is the daily life of an irregular immigrant like? How and why has racism spread during the past month? And what kind of solutions can be implemented in the future? So this presentation will not go in depth, so if you want details, you have to read the whole study. I've divided it in 6 parts. So the first part will be of why do irregular immigrants arrive here, the second part about their life here, the third part about xenophobia and racism, the fourth part about how Maltese institutions handle the issue, the fifth part about the future of irregular immigration in Malta, and the sixth part will widen the scope of the topic. For your information, this talk is being recorded by Campus FM and filmed by Super One. The first part, why do irregular immigrants end up in Malta? I will talk about the reason for migration, about what immigrants are looking for in the Union, about how we can categorize immigrants, and so why didn't they want to come to Malta? First, the reason for migration. So this part will give relevant facts about the situation in a number of countries in Asia and in Africa where most of the immigrants come from. Actually, nationals from more than 40 countries are residing in Malta. So first, Africa. As you know, Africa is the world's poorest continent, and it has had, and in some ways is still having, a very shaky and uncertain transition from colonialism. Since independence, African states have had frequently been hampered by political instability, corruption, violence, and authoritarianism. So borders and territorial disputes have also been common, with the European-imposed borders of many nations being widely contested through armed conflict. The countries of origin of the immigrants who are in Malta and who come from Africa are Eritrea. So Eritrea has achieved independence in 1993, which is fairly new. So it's one of the youngest independent states. Religious persecution is a particular concern in Eritrea, and in 2005, Eritrea was at the brink of a famine. There is also Ethiopia. So Ethiopia is one of Africa's poorest nations, and many Ethiopians rely on food aid. Somalia doesn't really exist in a de jure capacity, and its de facto situation is described as a free market anarchy. Somalia has no recognized central government authority, no national currency, nor any other feature associated with a normal nation-state. Sudan is a purely Islamic state that has the Sharia law and that hosted bin Laden for a couple of years. Since 2003, a war is destroying the region of Darfur, where 3.5 million are now hungry, 2,005 have been displaced due to violence, and 400,000 have died already. There is also the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which has suffered from the devastating Second Congo War, which was the world's deadliest conflict since World War II. Even if peace seems to have settled, the war completely destroyed Congo's economy. There is also Liberia, who has been afflicted by two civil wars from 1989 to 2003. They have displaced hundreds of civilians and destroyed the Liberian economy. Liberia knows peace since 2003, but this fragile peace is threatened by the instability in the neighboring countries like Sierra Leone and the Ivory Coast. In the Middle East and in India, the countries of origin of the immigrants are Iraq. So I'm not going to tell you about the war on terror and the war that has destroyed Iraq, and that was led by the UK and US forces. And now Iraq is more or less plunging into a civil war. There is also Palestine, so as well the conflict between Israel and Palestine doesn't need to be explained, and the future of this conflict is all the more blurred since both sides have lost their national leaders. And there is Pakistan and Sri Lanka too. So Sri Lanka was not already very stable politically, and it has been destroyed by the 2004 tsunami. So why are all these immigrants coming to our countries? The immigrants, when they leave their areas of origin, their family contacts, and the world they know behind them, they have for sure good reason to leave and a very strong motivation. So the reason why they risk their life through this journey is either political or economical, but they're all looking for a future. By now, almost 200 million people are not living in the place where they were born. So that is to show that migration is a worldwide phenomenon, it's characteristic of the human race, and it's unstoppable. But there is presently a contradiction between two movements. On the one hand, thanks to the development of capitalism and technical progress, displacement is made faster and easier for human beings. But on the other hand, the states are constantly reinforcing their borders and protecting their national interests. In the EU, this fence is represented by the nickname Fortress Europe. So immigrants who arrive in Malta can be classified in two categories. The classification is done by the Refugee Commission. So they can be either political or economical immigrants. So a political immigrant is a refugee. So what is a refugee? The 1951 Geneva Convention defines who is entitled to protection. Malta has signed the convention in 1970. So a refugee is someone who, owing to a well-founded fear of being persecuted for reason of race, religion, nationality, membership of any particular social group or political opinion, is outside of the country of his nationality and is unable, or owing to such fear, is unwilling to avail himself the protection of that country. There are over 55 million refugees in the world. The other classification is an economic immigrant. So an economic immigrant is someone seeking refugee status for purely economic reasons. So an economic immigrant is not entitled to protection in Malta and not entitled to protection in the EU. And so then, because economic immigrants do not qualify for refugee status, they don't have the right to stay here and should be deported. However, it would be a bit erroneous to say that the EU has no responsibility in the economic situations of developing countries. The influence of rich countries on poorer can lead to situations where thousands of Africans or Asians cannot make a living out of their business, which leads to massive migratory flows. To make an example, I will show you a little movie. So immigrants intend to reach mainland Europe, not Malta. So arriving in Malta is a consequence of a problem with the vessel or a bad calculation in the trajectory while steering the boat. The situation here results from such a petty coincidence. So I will now talk to you about the search and rescue area. The search and rescue area is a zone of 250,000 square kilometers. The armed forces of Malta are responsible for the boats in distress within this area. So when a boat enters Malta's search and rescue area, there are two options. If there is no problem, the vessel can keep on its way and either the immigrants reach Italy or they mistake Malta for Italy and land in Malta. Or if the boat is in distress, the Maltese government has an obligation of rescuing and providing them assistance, and then they're brought ashore. So how many immigrants have arrived in Malta since 2002? These numbers are on the increase. And last year, 1,822 arrived. It's usually when they set foot on Malta, most often at the southeast of the island, that irregular immigrants enter the public sphere. And here begins the Maltese phase of their journey. So in the second part, I will describe the daily life of the immigrants, talking about the detention system, the system of the open centers, immigrants and employment, and the Dublin Convention. So the first question that comes to mind is why detention policy? So in the interest of national security and public order, immigrants are kept in detention until their claim to their country of origin and other submissions are examined and verified. That's what the policy document of the government published last year says. So the detention system is also supposed to facilitate the authorities to do security screenings, health screenings, and to separate the refugees from the other migrants. There are four detention centers in Malta. They are located in Floriana, at Lista Barracks, in Halsafi, and at Takandia. The centers are overcrowded, and immigrants, when there is no space for them, are accommodated in tents. So in detention centers, the immigrants are accommodated in dormitories. They have fixed time to go out for exercising, on average 1 hour a day, eating, their prepacked food is prepared by the armed forces, and showering. Apart from this, no activity is organized. A few non-governmental organizations have access to the centers, provided that the minister, Tonio Boc, agrees, and they can provide the immigrants with the material and social care. A doctor comes from time to time, and if immigrants are sick, they are taken to St. Luke's Hospital. The standards of the detention centers leave much to be desired for a number of reasons. First of all, none of the facilities today used as immigration detention centers were intended for the long-term detention of people. The health of detainees is a great concern, including mental health, and there is also a lack of hygiene because there are not enough bathrooms and toilets. The detainees are provided with food that their metabolism does not always accept. There is also a lack of means of telecommunication, which is indeed a problem when people need to talk to their relatives. There is a lot of boredom as the immigrants are kept for 1 year to 18 months in a room without anything to do. And among detainees are vulnerable people, such as victims of torture, children, and accompanied minors, pregnant women, nursing mother, elderly and disabled, and people suffering from serious medical conditions or health problems. Last but not least, the media are not allowed inside the detention centers. Another problem is the fact that the centers are monitored by the police and the army, because soldiers are usually useful to protect the country, not to care for displaced people. And hence, they should not be responsible for humanitarian work. And this is a very serious problem, as they're working in difficult and precarious conditions with displaced people who are by definition fragile, upset, angry, frustrated, and confused. All these failures are being addressed by the setting up of the detention services and a drafting of national documents on irregular immigration by the task force. This document is going to be released very soon. While in detention, the detainees can apply for refugee status. So the Refugee Commission is responsible for the processing of the asylum application in Malta. The Refugee Commission is a first instance body. It's part of the Ministry of Justice and Home Affairs. So within 2 weeks after their arrival in Malta, the regular immigrants who wish to do so can fill in a preliminary questionnaire, so giving information about the name, age, sex, country of origin, reason why they apply, etc. The preliminary questionnaires are brought to the Refugee Commission office. An interview is processed. It takes on average 4 to 7 months before asylum seekers are interviewed. And then the refugee commissioner issues a recommendation. Either they are given refugee status or humanitarian protection, or else they are rejected. Humanitarian protection is given to those who are not proper refugees, but still whose country of origin is not safe and who'd better remain in the EU while the tensions in their countries are appeased. If the applicant is not satisfied, he has the right to appeal within 2 weeks. And if the recommendation is positive, then if the applicant fulfills a medical test, he's released from the detention centers. The refugee or beneficiary of humanitarian protection is given a certificate. So basically, it allows him or her to reside in Malta, to work here, and if he or she is unemployed, she will benefit from allowances, and the children have free access to primary and secondary education. They are also provided with a travel document. There is a problem around rejected asylum seekers. So rejected asylum seekers are the people who have been denied the right to protection and can be regarded as illegal immigrants as they don't have the right to stay in Malta. However, they can still benefit from the basic human rights and therefore should be treated with humanity and dignity, which is not always the case. Rejected asylum seekers should be repatriated, but it's not always the case for several reasons. So that could be either because his or her country of origin doesn't want to take him back, or the country hasn't been identified, or because of a lack of funds too. Not deporting the asylum seekers can be a problem in the sense that it shows that the government is not doing its job, and so it's perceived as inefficient. So immigrants, when they go out of detention centers, usually go to open centers. So most of the immigrants who are released, at least for the first week of their new life, go to open centers. It's a first step in the community before they move to their own flats. Open centers are run either by the Ministry for Family and Social Solidarity, the Catholic Church, or NGOs. The aim of these centers is not to assist people, but to restore their dignity, humanity, and self-esteem. Actually, there are close to 102,000 immigrants in open centers. These numbers are only estimation, how it's very hard, because it's very hard to have precise facts. Most of the immigrants, especially men, work when they're released in the community. Immigrants are entitled to a permit to work or to a work permit. The main fields in which immigrants are employed are construction, waste collecting and separating, and cleaning services. Needless to say that employment in Malta doesn't match their skills and level of education, since most of them have a very good education. The problem is that they are often employed by people who have no qualms and also pay them less than they would pay Maltese citizens. And even more alarming is the attitude of the major local trade union, the General Workers Union, which wants everything but have foreign workers with an irregular immigration background involved. Actually, the union does not address the exploitation to which any migrant workers are exposed, and it's not the migrants who are to blame for these conditions, but Maltese employers. And no self-respecting trade unionists could possibly inflame workers against each other, especially against the ones who are at a greater disadvantage. And contrarily to a persistent myth, migrants are not overtaking the job of the nationals. In Malta, and the unemployment rate has not changed significantly because of irregular immigration. Last but not least, we'll see why the migrants are stuck on the island. No immigrants wanted to come here, and we can imagine that none of them wants to stay here neither. So why do they stay? It's because of the 1990 Dublin Convention. So what the convention says, the convention was signed in Malta when Malta joined the EU in 2004. Its objective is to determine the member state responsible for examining the application for asylum, a matter which is not settled by the Geneva Convention. The application of this convention will ensure that every asylum seeker's application will be examined by a member state or a safe non-member country. Normally, it's the first country entered by the immigrant which is responsible. And the fingerprinting, all immigrants are fingerprinted when they ask for asylum, and this fingerprinting system are a way to cut asylum shopping, so immigrants won't ask for asylum in several countries. And it means that when an immigrant wants to move to another country, he will be checked and sent back to the country where he claimed asylum, so no double claims can be made. On a local scale, it means that once you are recognized protection in Malta, the Maltese government is responsible for you. And so the main problem for countries like Italy, Malta, Spain, Poland, or Slovenia is that they are at the gates of the European Union. So the rules will operate, and they will put a disproportionate burden on these border states. However, though they legally cannot, immigrants still try to move on to other countries. So several reasons explain such choices. Sometimes it's because there is a lack of opportunity here, or else because they can't imagine themselves staying and living on a small island, or because in larger countries there are larger communities of immigrants, or the presence of family, friends, ethnic ties, or language communities. And lastly, the migrants are fed up with the hostile attitude of a majority of Maltese. So the third part will be on the consequence of immigration in Malta, and the rise of xenophobia and racism. So first of all, I will give definitions of xenophobia and racism so we'll all agree on the terms. Xenophobia denotes a phobic attitude towards foreigners and the unknown. So it comes from the Greek word xenos, foreigner, and phobos, fear. The term is typically used to describe a fear or a dislike of foreigners, and xenophobia implies a belief that the target is in some way foreign. Racism refers to beliefs, practices, and institutions that discriminate people on their perceived or ascribed race. So it refers to an assumption that human species can be divided into race and that some races are superior to others. And both terms can hide themselves behind a so-called national interest. The national interest is a country's goal and ambition, whether economic, military, or cultural. It's about the state's survival and security, and the economic growth, power, and also the preservation of the nation's culture. So Malta has first been a land of immigration more than a country of immigration. This is due to the islander position of the country and its quite homogeneous people. So the position of the country rather led people to leave the island for economic reasons rather than attracted people hoping for a better future. In the 19th and 20th centuries, the Maltese sought a better life in Northern Africa or in Commonwealth countries like Canada or Australia. The Maltese who settled abroad had to face racism many times, though they were British subjects at the time. Dark-skinned Maltese were victims of a kind of xenophobia from the population of the host country. Nowadays, Malta is facing the opposite situation, since immigrants are coming to the country and are looked down upon by a majority of nationals. So among reasons for xenophobia, we can say that there is this kind of bad experience that Malta had with the Arab world, and which is still embedded in the memories collective, in the society's collective memory. And this anti-Arabic sentiment is truer than ever now, when the West feels the rise of a threat aggression from radical Islam. Besides, we can also assess that the detention system created fertile ground for racism and xenophobia, because not only does the system violate basic human rights, but it also fuels racist sentiment by depicting the immigrants as something dangerous that has to be kept and locked. So Malta started being a country of immigration in the 90s, when asylum seekers fled Yugoslavia and Iraq, both of which were at war. Since 2001, the influx comes more from sub-Saharan Africa and the Middle East. Tensions have recently started because the number of arrivals are very high and the look of the immigrants rather new in a country which population is very unmixed. So very little data exists about racism and xenophobia in Malta. The only recent survey I have found is the one done by Professor Vassallo that was published in the Times last summer. The survey shows that 97.3% of respondents are reluctant to having anyone having the right to settle in Malta. And only 17.3% think that everyone should be treated the same, no matter the religion or skin color. And even the fundamental right of political asylum is denied. So the main problem comes from the fact that 40 to 60% of immigrants in Malta are recognized to deserve protection, and they cannot go back to their country because of this fear of persecution, and they are neither able to move on. So that's why racism and xenophobia have become massive trends in the society. So these manifestations of the fear of foreigners are expressed in the newspaper, especially in the letters to the editor. Most of the arguments presented in the letters are inaccurate and only deal with irrational fears and an ignorance of the immigrants and their culture and their countries of origin. When xenophobia goes farther, it can lead to the demonstration of association or movements of citizens. So the birth of the ANR only broadened the existing spectrum of the far right in Malta, because the movement Imperium Europa was already existing for 2 years. The ANR organized a demonstration against illegal immigrants in October 2005. So not only was the title inaccurate, because illegal immigrants should not theoretically be in Malta, and according to the government, the authorities are doing their best to repatriate them. And had the demonstration been against irregular immigration, it would have also been useless, because you can't deny to the people the right to come here. So this big fuss gathered many thousands of demonstrators, though their complaints led to nothing. But the good comment I can make is that this is legal and assumed, because other actions are done anonymously and are only acts of cowardice and pure demonstration of racism. This leaflet was sent anonymously above the fences of open centers and detention centers. The worst action of all is, of course, this one, and it happened more than once. And recently, houses and cars of people showing solidarity with the immigrants have been burnt. So politicians and the whole multi-society has to face the new challenge of multiculturalism, because soon politicians will have to define clear positions and policies and stop beating around the bush or ignoring the issue. Segregation, that is to say the absence of mix between cultures and different ethnic groups, leads to nowhere. Most of the time, as regards to immigration, a country can opt between assimilation, that is to say that the immigrants gradually lose their culture to the profit of the receiving culture, or interaction. All cultures develop themselves and have relations between them. So multiculturalism is the new challenge for Malta. The interaction between different cultures is something that happened peacefully several decades ago in most countries of mainland Europe. Because of Malta's history and location, accepting aliens on the island is going to be the harder part of the issue. So this first part will explain how the Maltese institution handled the issue. So first of all, to clarify the position of the civil society on the topic, I'd like to remind that there is no such dichotomy as a pro-immigration group and an anti-immigration one. As a matter of fact, no one wanted asylum seekers to come here, because no one wishes that these asylum seekers had to flee their home countries because of violence and persecution. But the critical situation in many developing countries is forcing people to go through such experiences. So irregular immigration is not something that we can be in favor of or against, but it's a reality that is experienced. And before starting this first part, I'd like to show a little table I realized. It shows the opinion of political groups on their counterparts. So the Nationalist Party didn't give its views on the others as it's in government. The Malta Labour Party and Alternativa Democratica criticize the far right, and the far right criticizes AD and the PN in return. And AD suggests that the government involves more the NGOs in the decision making, and that is currently being done with the implementation of a task force. So first I'll talk about the government and the opposition. Irregular immigration is a topic on which the government and the opposition agree, at least on the main concerns, because they both agree on detention policy. The government and the armed forces, which have shown so far continuity and stubbornness in the issue, there are a few improvements, like the reducing of the detention period and a little move in providing legal aid. The PN, to a certain extent, is doing charity, but rarely treats the immigrants and asylum seekers or refugees as human beings. The core issue is not to help the immigrants, but to treat them as human beings with dignity and not to make them feel dependent and inferior. Both parties never forget the national interest and try to strike a balance between the concern of the Maltese and the human rights of the immigrants. The global feeling on both sides is that the government cannot solve the problem on its own, and that the European Union has to show responsibility and to share the burden and to provide Malta with more funds to lessen the number of immigrants. Dr. Gulia, Shadow Minister for Justice and Home Affairs, is the only political leader I met to emphasize on the need to address economic migration. The release of a new national policy document at the end of March, drafted by the government, the opposition and some NGOs, will hopefully improve the immigrant situation. Though Alternativa Democratica is not part of the government or the opposition, I'd like to mention that the Green Party has suggested many times, including at EU level, that the Dublin Convention should be amended. The fourth power, by being the link between the public sphere and the authorities, between the authorities and the population, has indeed a big role in the issue of irregular immigration. Hence, it is up to the media to decide whether they want to foster or to fight against racism. First of all, I'd like to say that there is a lack of a code of ethics. The best example of this in the English-speaking newspaper of Malta were six articles published in the Sunday Times. These articles were entitled "The Third Great Siege" in August, "No to Illegal Immigrants" in October, "The De Pasquale Report 1, 2 and 3 in January, and "The Law and Illegal Immigrants" last Sunday. These articles are utterly racist, and that is even more shocking because this incitation to hatred is done anonymously. Actually, everyone I met agrees that the author is someone very influential and highly protected, but no one revealed the identity of the special correspondent, and the editor of the Sunday Times, who I'm contacted many times, was reluctant to say it. So it's indeed a shame for the highly respected newspaper to behave like this. Whenever editors of newspaper should publish, whether editor of newspaper should publish racist letters or not, is another debate. Some think that the same freedom of expression should be given to the pro-immigration front and the anti-immigration front, even if there is no such distinction. But however, freedom of speech can never be total when it becomes to the detriment of other persons. And the law of Malta prohibits such bad-mouthing. And regarding the lack of self-censorship of the media, sanctions are prescribed in the Press Act. Having stated this, one must come to the conclusion that either no letter or article published in the local newspaper is inciting to hatred, or that such behavior is socially acceptable, and that there is no good reason to sue citizens expressing their views on the topic of immigration. The vocabulary is also still a problem in the media, with them using the words illegal immigrants and clandestine. Media are also denied the access to detention centers, as the policy document says. So it's to protect potential refugees. So this simply means that no journalist or cameraman is allowed to do his job of information and reporting the news inside the detention centers. Though it's true that not all people inside should be put in the media light, however, it's unfair to deny the rights of those who want to speak to the press. The consequence for this ban is that irregular immigration becomes a tabooed and blurred subject, and that there is no clear information about it except the information provided by the government, which is responsible for these very centers. A petition was written to ask access to the detention centers, because if the Maltese people could see with their eyes the condition of the detainees, they will maybe become more immune to racism. So to protest against the censorship and to defend press freedom, and hence to make available a better information, a petition circulated. It was signed by 100 of journalists, and it was ignored by the government. The NGOs and the religious authorities are also giving a helping hand to the immigrants. So among the NGOs helping inside the detention centers, we can mention the Jesuit Refugee Service, the Malta Red Cross, and the Peace Laboratory. There are also NGOs helping the immigrants in the community, that is to say the Malta's Immigrants Commission, which was in the beginning established to help the immigrants going out of Malta, but now it's responsible to assist the immigrants coming to Malta. So it provides them with protection, basic needs, accommodation, recreation, or schooling, and is the official partner of the UNHCR. There are also other NGOs advocating for the rights of the immigrants and who are leading actions aimed at fighting against xenophobia or against the detention policy. So again, the Jesuit Refugee Service, who is lobbying against the government's detention policy. They are also having projects aimed at fighting xenophobia. Amnesty International campaigns for the enforcement of the Geneva Convention on the status of refugee. And GRS and the Third World Group have led several actions showing that the detention policy is not necessary. Regarding the religious authorities, the Catholic Church has said that it has a duty of providing assistance to immigrants and respecting them. That's the official position. At the local level, the dealing with irregular immigration is more an issue addressed at the level of the parish. But the Church of Malta has made a statement saying that racism is a structural sin diametrically opposed to our creation as equals, all in the image of the Creator. Apart from this, church NGOs are very involved with the immigrants. For example, the Immigrants Commission is run by Monsignor Calleja, but there is also the Jesuit Refugee Services, the House of the Good Shepherd, run by Sister Agnes, the Nun of the Convent of the Bon Pastor, the Salesians, and the Peace Lab, who was set up by a priest, etc. So it's clear that in the reality, the church in Malta is heavily involved in the care and protection of immigrants. The Maltese Islamic Society is a tiny minority here, because 98% of the Maltese claim to belong to the Catholic Church. But it's interesting to mention it, because two-thirds of the immigrants are of Muslim confession. The Islamic Society has very few resources and is very grateful to the church and the NGOs, and the imam provides spiritual help to the immigrants and material help when he can. So there is also the new phenomenon of the far right in Malta. So immigration has become a goldmine for far rightists, Imperium Europa and Alianza Nazionale Repubblicana. So both of them have been built around the immigration issue and are fairly new. The launching of Imperium Europa was in February 2004 and the ENR in August 2005. Their rhetoric is at its acme when it's talking about immigration. And apart from these arguments, they don't have any other important matter of concern. This organization have not put forward feasible ideas that could help easing the tension created by immigration in Malta. They are very good at playing with the fears of the people and to give them illusion when they pretend to be a solution to what they call a plague. So most of the time, they are at the verge of legality, suggesting that international law should not be respected. So what is going to happen to immigration in Malta in the future? So here I will talk about the solutions which are put in place in the short-term perspective, but also we'll have a look at the long-term perspective and what can be done. So the quick fix solution to decrease the numbers. So there are several of them. First of all, Malta wants to share the burden. That is done through resettlement program. So due to its very small size and lack of resources, doubled by the refugees' lack of enthusiasm of being here, Malta has urged European countries to share the burden by accepting some of its refugees to come here and to settle in their country. The Netherlands accepted Malta's request, and for the first time in history, 36 refugees were resettled from within the EU. Malta is in negotiation for similar resettlement with Ireland and the Czech Republic, and the USA have already pledged to take 30 refugees a year. However, there is little hope that the member states will accept to host 1,500 to 2,000 immigrants that arrived and will arrive in Malta every year. So whenever they can, the Maltese authorities deport illegal immigrants and take part in joint repatriation flights with other EU member states. Malta has also sent repatriation agreements to the Commonwealth countries that may have nationals residing illegally here, that is to say, for example, Nigeria or Sierra Leone. But as I said before, repatriation is very expensive, and Malta faces logistic difficulties and cannot repatriate or deport all illegal immigrants. So if Malta cannot get rid of the immigrants when they are here, the other solution is to stop them coming. A solution that has been proposed is to narrow the search and rescue area. If the armed forces of Malta are responsible for a smaller zone, then the Maltese authorities will have to take care of fewer immigrants. But it's not possible, because the search and rescue area is related to the flight information region. And this region is bringing revenues to Malta, because each plane who flies over this zone is paying a revenue to Malta. And the Civil Aviation Department is hence making money out of this information region, and the revenue are around £3.5 million a year, and outnumber the expenses spent on irregular immigrants, that is to say £1.5 million a year. Financially, the Maltese government prefers maintaining the situation this way. Both narrowing the search and rescue area and increasing repatriation are very costly, and the public powers openly prefer to have more influx of immigrants rather than losing money. So this is a quote by the Minister of Foreign Affairs, and it's another questionable solution to irregular migration. So indeed, the quick fix solution presented above are not bound to bear fruits, because Europe is not a genuine fortress, and migration cannot be stopped overnight, and cannot be stopped by deterring immigrants. So the financial and political gap between Africa and Europe is too wide for the migrants to be defeated and go back home, because irregular immigration is about survival, and had the migrants stayed home, they would be futureless. So some prefer to die trying than to be killed or starved in their country of origin, and strengthening the borders will not help and will not change this. So at the end of the day, hardening the means of access to the European Union for immigrants has the pervert consequences of creating new illegal markets and hence developing the business of human trafficking. The harder the admission is in the sacred land, the higher the cost to go there. So this again is unfavorable to migrants, who will put even more their life at risk and whose frustration can only increase. In blue on the map are represented the drownings of the immigrants who try to cross the Mediterranean. So finally, if you don't want the immigrants to come to Malta and you don't want them to die while trying to come, the last solution is to make them stay on the southern bank of the sea. So the aim of the cooperation with Libya is to maintain the immigrants out of Europe. Libya is a country of transit towards Europe, and there are 1.5 million foreigners in Libya, that is to say 25% of the population. The EU and hence Malta's strategy regarding relationship with Libya is based on a rapprochement with Colonel Gaddafi's dictatorship and implementing an outsourcing of the problem. Libya, which has been isolated for years because of its support for international terrorism, is now a major gateway for irregular immigration. So EU countries who border the Mediterranean urgently want to control the flow, and Europe is trying to outsource irregular immigration management in Libya. But it's not Libya's problem if migrants leave the country to reach the EU. So to explain this, I'll use the example of Italy, which has reached an agreement with Libya. And from what I understood, Malta would like to have the same kind of agreement. So Italy is currently sending back to Libya migrants who may need protection and who in turn are deported. So Italy gives patrol boat to Libya, so Libya will monitor its coastline, and Italy is paying for repatriation flights performed by the Libyan authorities. The problem is that Libya is not a signatory to the 1951 Geneva Convention on Refugees. So it means that the Libyan government does not officially recognize the existence of refugees or asylum seekers, and that men and women who would deserve protection because of a well-founded fear of being persecuted will never be protected in Libya and therefore must attempt by every means to reach Europe, even at the risk of their life. Moreover, migration to Malta will not stop overnight. So Malta's case is now better known in Europe because it has been pushed at the European Parliament level, and respected dailies like The Guardian or Le Monde came to investigate in Malta in 2005 and gave accounts on the situation of irregular immigration on the island. So it's now Malta's turn to be realistic and to understand that all Mediterranean member states are facing the same reality, and a reality which should not be stopped overnight. So I could have taken the example of Lampedusa in Italy, but I'd rather choose the one of another gate of fortress Europe, the Spanish enclave of Melilla in northern Africa. Last January, I had the opportunity through Alternativa Democratica Zaza to attend a seminar on migration and human rights. This seminar was organized by the Federation of Young Urban Greens and was held in Melilla. In Melilla, the border is not symbolized by a sea, but by this double barbed wire fence that more than 20,000 migrants crossed last year. The audiovisual experience you have been through before this presentation showed that Malta and Spain are part of the same fortress. And I'm talking about Melilla to show that the issue of migration and of migration in Malta and Spain are related. Because now that the double barbed wire fence of Melilla and Ceuta in Spain have been reinforced, the migrants will change their routes and go to Libya to cross the Mediterranean to reach Europe. So they will attempt to reach Italy, and some will end up in Malta. And if a coastal patrol stops them, they will find other routes and still attempt to go to the EU. So till a common immigration policy is not implemented at EU level, quick fix solutions cannot be efficient. And if EU-wide solutions are not implemented to help regulating the influxes of immigration, the EU provides with many resources to fight against xenophobia and racism. So addressing racism and xenophobia means dealing with the consequences of immigration as a social problem. And that is mainly what the Maltese government and so civil society can do, as Malta will not change the causes of migration and not stop the political and economical instability of developing countries. So March 21st was declared International Day for the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination. So today we should be celebrating the diversity of Europe. However, xenophobia and racism are in the increase in the Maltese society. And as I said, xenophobia is due to an ignorance of the alien and above all of an absence of curiosity. So hence, educational campaigns to fight against racism should be encouraged. The first step is to overcome the idea that the Maltese are not really interested in other people, and then to fight xenophobia. JRS Malta and Movement Graffiti led campaign and still lead campaign against xenophobia. A European network against racism has been set up here, and there are also a multiplication of lectures, conferences, food and music events involving immigrants in order to show their real face to the media and the Maltese citizens. An anthropologist is also willing to build a database on the immigrants to have a better understanding of their experiences. What is also needed is a strong leadership of politicians, and these politicians have to face courageously the challenge of multiculturalism. Moreover, the laws against racism have to be generally enforced, because this law is hardly enforced and have been enforced only twice, and taking action against racism is a very delicate matter, especially because most of the people do not recognize their behaviors as racist. Moreover, Malta can, as a member of the EU, implement Directive 2043-EC and set up a commission that treats cases of racism. Finally, there is a need to focus on the real issue, immigration. So ideally, we should focus on immigration of the immigrant population who is supposed to stay on the Maltese territory, that is to say refugees, persons under humanitarian protection, and rejected asylum seekers who cannot be deported. In reality, very few of these people who are supposed to stay in Malta really stay for a long period because they still attempt to go abroad, but then they will be repatriated anyway. So, though they legally cannot, they still try. And integration in Malta, if ever possible, should start from the detention period. The main problem is that immigration is a two-way process, and that the majority of the Maltese are reluctant to accept migrants in the community, and that the migrants still hope to resettle in mainland Europe, and hence do not make enough efforts to be integrated. So this lack of motivation and initiative on both sides is only delaying an inevitable blend of cultures. The top concern is that a multicultural society does not create second-class citizens. But integration is definitely possible for foreigners in Moldova, as the success of the Jewish, Indian or Russian communities show it. At the moment, the Ministry for Family and Social Solidarity is committed to foster greater solidarity among all the members of the society. So the last part will be to widen the scope of the topic. I will first talk about the migration flows in Africa and Europe, then ask why migration to Malta is a problem, then see how we can help developing countries to develop, and then talk about the only solution that is feasible. So, migration flows to Africa. So to give an overview of the situation of refugees and in the world, here is a map. Refugees and asylum seekers are mainly located in Asia and in Africa, and then in Europe. And regional migration are very common in Africa because only the lucky few manage to reach Europe. So generally, when there is a conflict, they just move to the neighboring country, which is not always safe. So then I will see why is migration to Malta a problem, because that was my main question mark throughout my research. And personally, I don't believe that it's because of a question of cost. So immigrants cost £1.5 million a year. This figure was given by the Office of the Prime Minister. And so if we said that there are 4,000 immigrants on the island, which is a bit more than the normal figure, I mean 4,000 immigrants in closed and open centers, and then if you assume that there are 400,000 immigrant multi-citizens, it means that immigrants cost £3.75 a year to each multi-citizen, which is practically nothing. But even worse is the fact that the money spent on the immigration, irregular immigration, should go or could go to development aid. So it means that half of this 1.5 million, that is to say 0.75 million, should be used to fight against poverty. And this money is spent on the immigrants instead. So that means that half of this budget is really extra for the multi-society. So it means that each multi-citizen contributes for 1 lira and 90 cents a year extra for the immigrants, for their upkeep in open and closed centers. So then there is the argument of the size of Malta. It's true that Malta is a small and highly populated country. But then, how come that they can accommodate 1 million tourists every year? And if in Malta, immigrants represent 1.3% of the population, in Libya, migrants represent 25% of the population. So it's obvious that we can't say that all immigrants are going to stay in Libya. They have a bigger problem than here. Then there is the argument of the poverty of the immigrants. So 40 to 60% of the immigrants in Malta are recognized protection because they flee persecution. So it's obviously not because they are poor that the majority of them come. And then they dwell in open centers, but they don't love it. And if they could work from the start, from the detention period, that would be also better for them. And they don't ask for the food to be given to them. They'd rather cook for themselves than eat the food that they are given. And they'd rather care for themselves than have someone caring for them. And if immigrants were hired in jobs that matched their qualifications, they would obviously make more money than what they actually did, and money would not be a problem at all. Problem is that destroying employment discrimination takes a very long time. And finally, there is the argument of the threat to the Maltese society. So here are excerpts from letters to the editor, saying that Maltese can't cope with the migrants anymore. But still, I wonder how people who comfortably live in Malta can be disturbed by the so-called threat of disempowered migrants kept in detention centers, and of which close to the half will be theoretically repatriated or deported. So then there is this last question. Maybe it's because the immigrants are dark-skinned, because the Albanians, the Serbs, or the Russians didn't have so great difficulties to integrate. So finally, how can we help the third world to develop? Many development projects are carried out worldwide. Among them, we can talk about the Global Call to Action Against Poverty, which is implemented in Malta as the Stop Poverty Campaign. Another instance of development is fair trade, which enable farmers of the third world to make a living out of their production. So finally, what is the only solution to the problem? So migration is a human right. Besides, who would stay in a place where one cannot make a living and where his or her life is jeopardized? Happy people do not leave their country. And who here would rather leave the country and put all his money in a dangerous journey where the chances of survival are of 1 out of 4? And who would bid farewell to his home, his family, his friends to do this? Forced migration, especially irregular immigration, is a human tragedy, and what's happening in Malta is only the tip of the iceberg. To understand it, one must also look at all the hidden parts. So to conclude, to me, the irregular immigration crisis is rather a tricky situation for the immigrants than for the local population. However, instead of focusing on the social aspect of the issue, that is to say, acceptance and integration of refugees in the society and addressing the fear of a xenophobic population, the Maltese government is concentrating on numbers and on some way of having as few immigrants as possible on its territory. And as far as I'm concerned, it's a bit of an ostrich policy, because if emergency action is obviously needed to manage high influxes of immigrants, refugees and even some illegal immigrants will inevitably have to stay on the island at least till a common immigration asylum system are implemented. That may take 10 years. So the main crisis here is hence a social one, and the debate over irregular immigration plays with the secret fear of the Maltese, that is to say preservation of the culture, safety of employment and balance in the community. The voices raised in favour of a more inclusive society and a more human right-friendly approach to the situation are looked down upon by the majority of people who has not asked for anything and who doesn't want to be bothered by unwanted asylum seekers. But no one wanted asylum seekers to come, as no one wishes them to face troubles that they faced in their country of origin. So sadly, irregular immigration is on the increase and will not be stopped by a reinforcement of Fortress Europe. Even development aid will not be enough to stop a whole generation of sub-Saharan youth to look for a future. It will take decades to restore hope in a continent that has been colonized, looted, and that is still manipulated by rich countries to become even richer, and that now has to face the consequences of an unsustainable economic growth. In this regard, the question of economic refugees needs to be addressed urgently. So there is no short or medium term to answer south-north migration, and using detention centers as a deterrent or hardening the border patrol look ridiculous when the issue is examined on a global scale. So while I truly agree that Malta is not responsible in any way for Africa's distress, it's not an excuse for adopting a defensive attitude. An acceptance of multiculturalism is at stake since Malta's entry in the European Union, and it is now time for the country to be up to this new challenge. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Fiona. On behalf of Ceratonia Foundation, I would like to thank all of you for attending up tonight. And we shall now open the floor for discussion and any questions or comments. That gentleman over there, please.
Would you consider the love of one's country and preserving one's national heritage as xenophobic and racist?
Do you want to make a comment, Jean-Pierre?
I think that the love of one's country does not imply being racist or being scared of other cultures.
And everybody has the right to leave his own country. But has anybody the right to occupy another country?
Refugees have the rights, if they are recognized protection, to settle in another country where they have been granted protection.
If they love their own country, can't they fight for their own rights instead of occupying other people's places?
Who are you talking about? The refugees or the...
Africa is a rich country.
Africa is not
a rich
country.
Continent. They have jewels, they have diamonds, they have gold, they have wood, they have agriculture, they have oil, they have everything. So there is something wrong in Africa. What is wrong?
I think what is wrong is the consequences of colonialism. What is wrong with Africa is the oldest consequences of colonialism, because colonialism has looted Africa, and Africa is left in a state of despair, and there are civil wars at the moment, and so that explains all the wars, and not only civil wars actually, led to people fleeing their countries. And then we have this obligation, because Malta or any country of the EU has signed the Geneva Convention, and so we have to host people who are fleeing from dangers abroad. That's an obligation. That's the Geneva Convention, not me who's saying it.
Hi, my name is Neil Faltzad. I'm the local representative for UNHCR in Malta. I'd like to clarify a few points which might clarify your doubts. First of all, I should explain that when we speak about refugee law, we're not speaking about a historically African problem. If you know your history, refugee law came about because of European refugees. So all this hullabaloo about problems in Africa is a novel problem. Refugee law came about because of refugees in Europe. So we can get over the idea that refugees are only African, because as you've shown in your presentation, they are not only African. There have been many, many European refugees from very rich countries. So refugees are not only Africans. I'd also like to explain the point that the right to seek asylum is a fundamental human right. It is as fundamental as the right of you to come here today and listen to this guy's presentation. The right to leave one country, no matter how rich or how poor a country is, the right for you to leave and seek protection in another country is a fundamental human right. And by creating strategies, by governments creating strategies to keep out asylum seekers, they are technically violating principles fundamental to refugee law and international human rights law. You cannot keep out an asylum seeker from your territory. You just cannot do it. If you look at the statistics presented by Fiona and the official statistics of the Refugee Commissioner, official Maltese government statistics, more than half of the asylum seekers coming to Malta deserve international protection. Nobody's lying about this. It's official. It's in the annual report of the Refugee Commissioner, and they're published by the government. More than half the asylum seekers arriving in Malta deserve a form of international protection, whether that's refugee status or humanitarian protection. So this argument that they are not genuine cases is facile, because if you look at the statistics, it's there. But more than half of them are. More than half of them are.
And
it's a simple fact.
And if not for the others, they can't be repatriated. So it's not putting a burden off them, but it's not their fault if they can't be repatriated, obviously. I mean, the one who are staying here and who shouldn't be here, that's not their problem. I mean, it's because the government is not repatriating them.
Any other questions, please?
I'd like to stay and listen to the discussion, but I'll have to rush off, so I'd like to make some small comments. I have to declare my position in this. Fiona was a stagiaire with us for these months, and I am her supervisor. I take absolutely no responsibility for her work. It is all her merit, because the supervision I had to do was very, very little. So what I would like to say is, first of all, a big thank you, which we owe her. Because Alternativa Democratica or the Ceretonia Foundation, whoever, cannot take ownership of this document, although we can very easily endorse every word of it. What I would like this document to become is the basis for our discussion on this issue. And I invite people like Marcel and even the people who walked out. Maybe they'll get it by, extrasensory perception. For us to discuss this issue objectively and in a more mature manner. This is an objective reality. For us to be competing who is more Maltese, as if there is some small group in the country that has a monopoly on patriotism or national fervor or DNA purity or all this nonsense. The discussion has been for many months in this way. The quotations that I have heard myself read that I have said on certain websites are absolutely astounding. The quality of the debate has been disgusting. It is now time for us to see our future, because whether we like it or not, our future is in Africa. It is coming towards us, and it is challenging our core beliefs. Because if we don't like it, and to respond to it, we throw away the very heart of what makes us not Maltese, not Europeans, but modern civilized persons, our respect for human rights. What I would like the people who are worried about it to consider is that it will not take very much for any of us to be seeking asylum in another country. It was not long ago when we did to one another more or less what happened in Rwanda, except it wasn't so spectacular. There are more desaparecidos in Malta than there are in Argentina. Over there are 30,000. Over here there are a handful. Nobody, we don't have a Plaza de Mayo. We just forgot about it. Our history is still buried. It is a stinking open grave between us. Okay? We have been unable to face it. We have been unable to do what has happened in certain African countries, which is a peace and reconciliation process, which establishes together in a society the need for protection and internalization as individual citizens of human rights. And this is what we must do. It is our challenge. We have not done this. We have not developed as a democracy. We have not internalized human rights or the sentiments that belong to them. Because unless we do, we are going to be completely handicapped in facing the future that is certainly coming.
Any other questions or comments, please?
Yeah, well, I think I really take too seriously these normal lowland ANR or whatever. And even you mentioned the survey that, I don't know, 90-something percent of Maltese are racist. I wouldn't call that accurate, quite frankly, because it's easy for me to listen to other Maltese people talking against Arabs, which everyone of us hears, you know, here on a daily basis or something. However, when people get to start to work with them and all that, they pretty much change their attitude. And sometimes I think, well, I'm not talking exactly about your study now, in general.
Mm-hmm. No,
I think
because the 97.3 were not racist. They were people against the right to anyone to settle here.
Yes, but then again, when does the statistic, the actual period was when there was a peak for immigration. Now that it has already settled down, I wonder what the result would be. So in that sense, I think pretty much we are xenophobic. We are afraid of but I think labeling Maltese racists, well, it's not exactly inaccurate, but it's not that acceptable, because after all, if you think about it, a lot of people say they're racist, but then when they start working with these people, they change, sort of thing. And I think we even their reaction, ANR's reactions, we take them too seriously. These are small extreme groups that I think we're the only country that we're taking them so seriously, quite frankly.
I really want to endorse what the last speaker just said. I think we can really overestimate the extent of racism and xenophobia in this country. And I do not think it helps the argument at all. While I applaud the comprehensive nature and the clear nature of your presentation, I happen to be one of those people who thinks that too much is made of racism and xenophobia in Malta. It only magnifies the problem and makes it worse. One particular example in your presentation, you talked about the inflammatory letters to the editor in the Sunday Times. If you want my opinion, the whole behavior of the Malta Times needs applauding. The way the Malta Times has photographed, presented immigration problems, gone to the detention centers, sought out immigrants, and tried to give them a voice is excellent. I really want to take this opportunity to publicly congratulate the Times of Malta for having stood up for immigrants on many occasions. So I think there's a certain amount of imbalance in your presentation. But I think it's... Let me just finish. I think it stems from a certain tendency to say, oh dear, we have racism, therefore let's get our backs up against it. Let's rather be a bit more balanced in our whole analysis of the problem in order to come up to the solutions to what is in fact a serious problem.
Thank you. I understand the point of view. Just to make a point that I condemned the editorial line of the Sunday Times, not the Times, they don't have the same editor, and the special correspondent never wrote in the Times so far.
Just want to make a small point. I think we have spoken a lot about the regular immigrants, but maybe we have spoken very little about what they really feel. I just want to make one point. I work with refugees. I have the opportunity of speaking to many of them. As you said, they are in Malta against their will. Their only hope is to be able to continue their journey and go to the country of their choice. For me, the Dublin Convention is a shame. It's a Dublin Convention, and I would like to hear countries like France, Holland, Belgium, England, Germany, which were the countries which were behind the Dublin Convention, to defend themselves and to put the burden on southern flank countries like Malta, Spain, Italy, and so on. I think the Dublin Convention is a shame because it's one way of telling the refugees, making a split in Europe between the rich countries of the north and the poorer countries of the south, putting the burden on the poorer countries of the south, okay, and at the same time telling them, look, there is Article 13 of the human rights. Article 13 gives you the right to leave any country, including your own. But it doesn't give you the right to leave the country where you have applied for asylum. And I think that is hypocrisy. It gives you the right to leave any country, even your country of origin, but not the country where you have applied for asylum. And I think unless on the European level we try to see this problem as a European problem and not a Maltese problem or Italian problem or southern flank problem or a border country problem, unless we really do that, I don't think we'll be doing anything good for the regular immigrants themselves. Thank you.
I agree very much with what you said. In my studies related the few steps that the EU made so far to have a common asylum policy, that is to say that instead of asking for asylum in the first country that you enter, you make a global claim for the whole EU, and then not you decide, but you go to one of the countries, not necessarily the one that you went to first.
Once again, on behalf of Ceratonia Foundation, I would like to thank all of you.
Thank you.
You have just listened to a talk organised by the Ceratonia Foundation. Fiona Texer from the Institute of Political Studies in Rennes talked about irregular immigration and Malta in a talk entitled At the Gate of Fortress Europe.